Hey guys, welcome to a show I have named Lessons Learned, aka L Squared, which is, I don't know if it's lame or not yet. I'm deciding if it's lame or not. We'll get there. We'll get there to that decision. I just want to give a big shout out to Radio Lori for even putting me on the station and for everyone getting to listen to my voice right now. Like, that's literally insane to me. That they even are letting me do this. So just thank you for Radio Lori for even letting me do this. This is episode one of the show. This is my first episode of the show that I'm doing. I'm naming this episode My Name Is. It's kind of like an introductory show, I guess. But anyways, I kind of want to first explain what Lessons Learned is, the whole show is even going to be about, because lessons learned could literally mean anything, because we go to a university, you know, lessons, we have lessons every week. So these are going to be different kind of lessons, I guess, that I'm going to be kind of sprouting out to you. I wouldn't even really call me an expert on anything that I'm going to be talking about. Like, I don't know, it depends on who you ask. But basically, I pitched this idea to Radio Lori, to the station manager and the program manager, and I basically pitched this idea where I'm going to be talking about myself, my life, a lot of things that I've experienced in my life, a lot of stories that I've gone through. I kind of gave them, like, a gist of, like, or I guess an outline of events that have happened to me, or like things that I've gone through, especially recently in the last few years. And we will get into all of that. And basically each episode it's going to be centered around a certain topic and experiences, like plural, that I've gone through relating to that topic or theme, and kind of like what I learned out of it, and like all the mistakes I made, and like how I grew out of it. And like, I have definitely built up a lot of self-worth and like emotional intelligence, and just like being really self-aware of like my, and even like my surroundings, and like just being aware of everything all the time. And yeah, so this episode is basically gonna kind of give you a gist, like I said, a gist of who I am. This episode is number one, and it's called My Name Is. And yeah, the show is called Lessons Learned. And I really, that's the main thing I want you guys, anyone listening to me right now, anyone listening to me babble on so far, I want someone to, you know, listen to me and be like, wow, like, and see a different perspective than they wouldn't normally see, and maybe, yeah, like I said, like, get something out of it and learn something from me, from just telling a story, really, of my life. So the first thing we're gonna do is say my name, which is a mouthful of a name, and we're gonna explain the whole mouthful of a name and why I even have this huge name. My name is Amelia Joyce Deegan Shank. That's my full legal name. I prefer, if there has to be a last name, I prefer Amelia Joyce Shank or Amelia Shank. But I also have like an online or else whatever of Amelia Joyce, just purely Amelia Joyce. Just because I like that better. But if it has to be a last name, it's Amelia Joyce Shank. But my legal last name and legal full name, I guess, is Amelia Joyce Deegan Shank, which is hyphenated. And if anyone wants the spelling, it's interesting, because no one can actually ever spell it without me actually having to help, usually. I don't think I've ever really met a person who can spell that full name without needing my assistance. But Yeah, the reason for the mouthful, the name is, my name's Amelia. It's Amelia with an E. And then Joyce Shank is actually my grandmother's name. Shout out if my grandma ever gets to listen to this. Hi, Grandma. I love you so much. I miss you. But yeah, her name's Joyce Shank, and she's the sweetest person on this earth. And that's the main reason why I wanted to be just Amelia Joyce Shank, is because then her name is in my name forever. And I was originally supposed to be like that, but my mother's last name is Deegan, so my dad made the compromise of doing a hyphenated Deegan Shank thing, even though my grandmother's name is the middle name. So I got this, even in school, in kindergarten, I remember, like, on my hook, it said D-S, because they couldn't fit Deegan Shank. They could never fit Deegan Shank on anything. So it'd be like, or they just put Amelia D, period. and it was just, I hated, like, having this, like, mouthful of a name as a child, because you had to, like, spell that out for people at school, and I also went to church as a child, so there was a lot of me having to, like, people, I'd say my name, and they would be like, what? And I'd have to keep sprouting it out. But anyways, I just never liked my name, except for the Amelia Joyce. Like, I always liked that part, because it's my grandma's name, it's my name. And Amelia is very, it's a unique name. I like it. I like the name. I haven't met really anyone with that name, especially the spelling. I know our station manager has Amelia as their name, but the spelling is definitely, like, different. Like, mine's, and both spellings are beautiful, but yeah, so that's my name. I want to kind of get into, like, who I am and, like, the gist of me, so you, like, you're wondering, like, why someone would give someone a show of just talking, you know, about their life, like, what makes my life so interesting. So basically, I'm a mature student, so that's the first thing you should know about me. I'm a first year. I have a daughter who's almost 5. I'm turning 27 in about a week. So yeah, I had her when I was 22. I was 21 when I had her. Most of her life, we've been in transitional homeless shelters, and we've also been in emergency homeless shelters in the KW area. We did that for 3 years, and just recently, in October, we found a place, a bachelor that we live in together. And you're probably, first off the bat, you have all these questions in your mind about, like, my family or her dad or anything like that. And very valid questions, because you're probably confused. You're like, what? Like, how did you not have, how are you homeless with your child for years? Like, how is that even possible? Well, with transitional shelters, you can stay up to a year at each transitional shelter. And then for emergency shelters, it's more like fast pace. And that's how we got this place, is by, like, going through, scouring through, like, Marketplace and just getting something on Market Rent really as fast as we could. We stayed in a motel this summer because the transitional shelter we were staying at actually let us stay longer because of COVID, because they couldn't really evict us. So we got to stay, like, an extra, like, few months, even though in that period of time we can only stay a year, but we got to stay for, like, 16 months. And then eventually the, like, lockdown was lifted for a bit in the summertime. So from August 1st to October 1st, we lived in a motel together, me and my daughter. So yeah, she's 4, she's turning 5 in June, and I could literally do a whole episode on just the motel, which I probably will. There's a lot of stuff happened, like, just daily stuff. And actually, she started school for the first time while we were living in a motel. And we lived in a motel through, an emergency homeless shelter. Like, any family who lived in this emergency homeless shelter, they couldn't stay on site because of, the bad stuff going on and, like, the lack of, like, privacy and security at the actual, like, on-site women and family shelters. So they would put, they started putting families in motel rooms because then you have, like, a lock and key so no one can get in your room or anything. And it's safer, but it's not, everyone who stays there is not necessarily safe themselves. And, yeah, like I said, she started school for the first time. Mind you, yeah, the whole time we've been homeless, the years we've been homeless, I got my diploma at St. Louis Adult Learning Center, shout out to them, and we were homeless the whole time. And then, yeah, she was in daycare while I was in St. Louis day classes, and then I applied to Lori while I was still in the transitional system, and did my very best to go to university while being a mom. And it was a struggle in itself. I'm really, really glad I'm here. I think a lot of people would say they're definitely glad I'm here in, like, a safe place for the first time in years. And yeah, so that's the gist of me. Which is, like, not even really a good, like, that's just what's happened recently in my life. So I'm a mom. She's sleeping in the next room right now, and this is how I'm recording this. And you're probably wondering, like, how would someone even let a child go through all this and let them live with me homeless and all this stuff? And that, sometimes I think that in my brain too, and I agree with you. That, like, why would all these social services and people who know me, I had to live with social workers basically on a regular basis, right? Why would that they all let this child live this way? It's because I was the safest person there was for her. I always have been. Which is, like, how rough is that to say? Is that, like, the woman who's her mom? Like, I've always taken care of her. But the woman who is homeless with her is the safest person that she could be around. Or has the, like, bond and capacity to. So that should say something right off the bat. I want to get into my family previously. Because I have my own family now with her. And her name's Lily. But, like, the flower, I named her after my favorite flower. She's literally my oxygen, like, literally my everything. Like I said, she's my family. Like, there's no one else, like, above her. Like, she's even above myself. Not to get, yeah, emotional there, but anyway, so let's get into, like, my family dynamic of when I was, I guess, growing up. Because you're probably wondering what the heck. I wonder if I can say heck. I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, so my parents, it's probably the first thing you're wondering. And, like, my siblings and all that stuff. How I grew up. So I grew up in the next city over. And I grew up in, like, my parents are together. And I have three other siblings, so there's four children in my household. Not at all at one time at one point, but anyway. I have two older brothers, and then I have a sister who's only a year younger than me. So we were very close in age, me and my sister. And me and my sister are still very close, and she's my best friend. Shout out if she's watching this, I love her so much. She literally is still my best friend to this day, and she does a lot of vegan activism, so shout out to her for that, because she's very passionate about that, and I give her so much praise for doing things that she's passionate about.
And that's what I'm trying to do right now. But anyway, so family members. So my parents and, like, the family dynamic. When I was growing up, I didn't think, I thought everything was okay, because most things were. And I grew up in a very faith-based community also. So I was going to youth group every Wednesday, and also sometimes every Friday too. And then I had church on Sundays. And then I also went to a Catholic elementary school and a Catholic high school. So in elementary school, we would like walk to the church during and do mass there. And it was very faith-based, like a lot of it. And we'd like talk to the priest like it was one of our teachers, and we would have like masses all the time in school hours, and like confessionals, and like a lot. It was just very based around like religion, which is like at the time I didn't, it was normal to me. When you're a child, like, you don't, that's all you know, like that's all I knew. And I would just, you know, my grandparents would babysit me after school, and like then I would go home and like watch television with my siblings, or like play with toys with them, and like we eat dinner, and like it didn't like really become apparent to me that something was like, I guess, like off, until I was like an adolescent, probably around the age of 12, which is around the time my mom's dad died of cancer, lung cancer. He was the one who used to babysit me after school, and I considered him like one of my parents. Like, he taught me how to tie my shoes, and like, he was from Scotland along with my grandma, so this is my mom's side. And yeah, they were very religious, like the most religious people I knew, and like, yeah, very Scottish, very European. And they just had like a very like set mindset of certain things, and a lot of stuff I still don't know about, like my aunts and uncles and my mom's like childhood, that I don't know if I will ever know. But just because like my grandparents like moved here when they got married, basically, like I think my grandmother was like 19 years old when she moved to Canada with my grandfather, and he was 25, because I think he was 6 years older than her. But anyways, so around that time when my grandfather died, my mom's dad, is when I started to, like, I guess, be very aware of my surroundings, and like, especially like the dynamic when it comes to my mother. And she's probably going to listen to this, and that's okay. And I have no fear at this point of anything. So that being said, yeah, I'm just going to speak my perspective on what my childhood was, and that's going to be that, I guess. So my mom has a lot of like unresolved issues. Things that she's, like, a lot of traumatic things that I don't think she's ever dealt with. And she deals with that in a lot of different ways. A lot of different coping mechanisms. So, yeah. Not up until recently, like, I don't think my mom ever admitted it, but she has admitted it recently that my mom is an addict. Her main, I guess, choice would be alcohol, and then there's other substances as well. But yeah, I didn't really realize it was like a really big factor, I guess, like where it's like a negative factor, I guess, until I was in my adolescence, where I would see breakdowns, or like, and I didn't even know it really was abuse, and like, because she never really got that physical. It was mainly like mental and emotional abuse, and like we would just me and my siblings would just like be so scared when she would come home, because she would just pick someone to like fight with or like something to fight about, and that's when like I said, when my grandpa died, that's when it went into full blown, where like it was like a projection completely, and yeah, she would just kind of bury her emotions with that, and then also like substances. And my dad, I love him so much, and like it's not that I don't love my mom, but yeah, like my dad did a lot for my family, and they both worked full-time when I was younger. Like, I'll give them all that credit. Like, they provided as much as they thought they could possibly provide, but as far as, like, emotional availability, it just wasn't there. Which is, like, 4 kids in a house with no emotional availability, like, things obviously are gonna go awry. And, like, my dad, like, he was more, like, acts of service, kind of. That was his love language. And, like, so he did a lot for us in that way. And, like, he always made sure we had, like, good dinners. And he was the cook. And he would also, like, make sure my mom didn't get too wild with her emotions. Because her mood swings were, like, really bad, like I was saying. And she would just, like, he would make sure it was, like, as, like, cut off as possible as possible, like if as much as it could possibly be. And yeah, I was a middle child, and like at some point I was also like all of those things. Like I was the oldest at one point because my brothers left, because my brothers are 5 and 8 years older than me. So I at one point, and then it got so bad where I was cooking for me and my sister, because my mom's, like, stopped cooking, and then also when I was, when I was 18 or 19, and my sister was, like, we were all still living at my parents' house, my dad had a stroke, and he became physically unable to, like, his acts of service were physically unable to happen anymore. So my mom had to, like, do a lot of caregiving, and she just had never really been able to. And to put on the responsibility must have been really heavy. And, like, I couldn't imagine not being able to do something and then being told you, like, kind of had to. But, yeah, I had to, like, make sure me and my sister basically survived. And we didn't have money because, you know, and my parents stopped, like, really, like, trying to put groceries in the fridge and mainly focused on, like, their substances, which really did suck for us because we ourselves can't live off substances. And, yeah, it was just a bad situation in my adolescence, for sure. And, yeah, a lot of, like, trauma happened in those, like, periods. But, yes. And, like, probably my sister is the only person in my family that I do talk to that I used to live with when I was a child. And, like, we can get into, like, all the, like, lists and pros and cons and all that of reasons why, like, I don't talk to some or not family members or friends or whoever. It's just like a matter of like toxicity, and like especially my daughter being around toxicity and like negative energy or negative behavior or negative decisions, where like you're not thinking about my child's best interests in that current situation or moment. You're only really thinking like selfishly, and like I don't think that way. Is what it comes down to. But Like, I always, like, put her above, like, everything in my mind. Like, it just goes automatically to that. And, like, yeah, it's just, like, toxic things that people have done or said to me that I just can't have her be in that cycle as well. I don't want her, like, why would I want her to experience the same things or, like, get told the same things that I got told? And it affected me greatly, the things that I was, like, told or I had to be or kind of mold into be, which sucks, trying to be told to mold into something that you, like, you know in your mind you can never be. You're like, that's, like, not possible. And they're like, but it is, though, because we've seen it's possible with other people. It's like, that's great. It's not who I am, bro. But, yeah, I just, from experiencing all that, just, like, that's just, like, in a nutshell, guys. Like, that's just a nutshell right there. And, like, from all that, like, what I value most now is, like, being safe and being sheltered. Having self-worth where I don't have to, like, rely on people who I know are going to be toxic for me or who I know are going to abuse me in a situation or abuse my daughter in a situation. I don't have to rely on those types of people, to, like, get by and survive and, like, thrive also. Like, I never want to be in a situation or living in a situation again where my daughter is put at risk for even, like, the slight of, like, behavior toxicity, you know, like, or having to see, like, even someone, like, spreading, like, negative energy to someone, another adult in another room, you know, like, any of that. Like, I don't want her to ever, like, feel that, like, animosity. And, like, some people think that's, like, normal because of, like, to, like, argue in the next room and, like, have, like, that, like, those heated stuff and, like, or even, like, talk about adult conversations, like, in front of children or even just, like, stuff you're going through with, like, your friends or your family or whatever, and just, or just, like, you know, just shooting the shit, you know, like, literally, even if you just want to do that, like, I feel like it's, like, there's a time and a place for everything, and, like, it can always wait. Like, I feel like the kid is always so, their mental stability and health is way more important than whatever you have to talk about right now. Like, it can wait. And, like, the fact that people, like, literally thrive and like the drama of it all, it's just, like, will probably never make sense to me, ever. I just don't understand. Even, like, talking, like, talking smack about, like, your family members, like, why is that, like, a thing that you like to entail into your everyday life? I don't understand. And, like, it's just, like, second nature to people almost, and it's just, like, kind of scary how it's second nature to people. It's second nature to just be, like, I don't know, judgmental or, like, kind of, like, almost, like, not almost, manipulative and, like, emotionally abusive. Like, that's just, like, not cool. Like, you're acting one way to someone, but then like, trying to, you know, find out as much as you can about them, but then talking about it with other people that they know, and you're, like, discussing private info that you, like, basically dug out of them, and like, that's not the kind of people that I want around. These are people that I have blood, like, I have DNA with these people, right? And, like, that's when I knew I had to, like, get her out of it. Get her out of that cycle, I guess. Like,
I'm looking at, like, I looked at myself and I was like, do I really want her to have the same, like, environment that I had? No. Or, you know, I want to be, like, emotionally there for her and, like, emotionally available and, like, make sure she's always know that she's good enough, because for the longest time I thought I was never good enough for anything. And that's some truth right there. That's some truth for sure. I'm just so grateful for everything. Like, even having this little tiny bachelor, guys, I call it my love shack. Because it's literally my love shack. It's just me and my kid, and we've gotten this far. Like, years of being in the shelter system of, like, in, like, literally doing sped acts every 6 months. Like, if you don't know what a sped act is, you just don't know. But just being in the shelter system, and I'm even thankful for this little love shack. Like, I'm seriously so thankful for it, and, like, being fed and, like I said, warm and, like, safe. Like, the big thing is that we're safe. Because for a lot of that, guys, for a lot of that period of time, we were straight up not safe. I'm trying to make her as safe as I could. And I protected her, but, like, it was not a safe situation. Especially, like, in the summertime when we were at the motel, like, that was not safe. But I tried to make it as safe as possible. Like, I had blackout curtains, let's just say that. The main thing that I am grateful for is Lily Marie. It's the main thing I'm thankful for, truly. She's, like, so intelligent and funny and talented and creative and just a blessing, all in, like, the biggest blessing of my life. I knew from a very young age that I, like, wanted to be a mother. Like, I knew that I looked at my life and I was like, I want to be the mom so I can, you know, be the one doing all the stuff and planning everything and doing, because my parents weren't really doing that besides, like, sports, which, like, I wasn't really that big into sports. My parents were, which was, we differed there. Like, I got into it because they got into it, but they kind of definitely try to mold me into, like, an athlete. And me and my father share the same DNA metabolism, also, where we have, like, the lowest metabolism ever. So, like, me being an athlete, like my siblings, which my siblings all have the DNA and metabolism of my mother, which is very, like, high metabolism and very athletic. All my siblings were athletes. And they knew that if I was an athlete too, I wouldn't be getting bullied like I was getting bullied in every aspect of my life, whether it be school, church, or camp, literally getting bullied at all three of those with different groups of kids. So it's just like they were trying to make it, they had my best interest at heart, okay, at the end of the day. And they, and their minds, and, like, their upbringing, right? Like, if you think about their upbringing and how they were raised, they knew that was, like, a good, like, direction to go, especially because my siblings were already into athleticism and, like, sports. So it made sense to already try and steer me in that direction. But the problem was I sucked. The problem was that I was not very good. At all. Like, I had no real interest in it at all. Like, I had no passion for it. Where compared to my siblings, they actually did have passions for sports. Like, my sister was, she did cross country and like track and field mostly, and then she did rugby at some point. And she, yeah, she was very athletic. And then my brother was, he did baseball. He was a pitcher. And then he also did hockey as well. I'm thinking if he did, he did track too, I think, also. He did, like, track when he was, like, in elementary school too. But anyways, they were just very athletic. And I had to go to, like, their games and their meets and, like, their races and all that stuff. And, like I said, kind of, like, forced into that life. And they kind of, like, tried to get me. I did softball from the age of, like, 5 to the age of 12. And then when I was 12, I was, like, or, like, I think it was 13, one of those ages where I was, like, I don't really like it at all, by the way. Just kind of doing it because everyone else is doing it and my siblings are doing it. So it's, like, woo. And I got to be on the same, like, team as my sister because, like I said, we're only a year apart, right? And my dad was a coach every year that my sister and I did softball. And that's when I stopped doing it. That, and, like, my dad did a couple more years with my sister, and then he started doing coaching for my brother's baseball, which I did concession stand for, and I could do a whole other episode on just being concession stand girl throughout my adolescence. That was interesting. And my sister was the announcements, so she would do the music and do the score and, like, announce the people coming up to bat. Anyways, like, what a life we lived. And that was, like I said, like, that's just the gist of it all. Like, it was just, like I said earlier on the episode, from the outside looking in, and from, like, even, like, some of my different family members' perspectives, they see nothing wrong with, like, how my childhood went down, or, like, the family dynamic went down. Like, they're like, you weren't getting abused or, like, you know, beat up or anything, or, like, but, like, the whole picture wasn't actually what was going on. Like, the whole, like, facade wasn't actually what was going on. And so from, like, the outside looking in, everything looked okay. But, like, especially emotionally, everything was not going okay. And, like, especially when it came to, like, addiction, everything was not okay. And it's still not okay to this day. And I don't know if it ever will be okay or resolved or healed. I don't know if that trauma will ever be even touched at all. I have no idea. I definitely touched my trauma. I went to therapy for over a year during my homelessness. So I got to a point where I was like, I think I need it. I've never done therapy in my life. So at the, like, ripe age of, I was 25 at the time when I first started therapy, the ripe age of 25, I was like, look, I need to do therapy for the first time. So I did that, and I ended up blocking out. And, like, sometimes you, like, go into a therapist's office and you just don't click with a therapist. But I ended up really clicking with the first one that I had, which was awesome. And yeah, I went to her for over a year. Even during COVID, we did, like, online, like, therapy. And she, like, it started off as okay to be me counseling because I came out about over a year ago. And that's another story in itself. I haven't even touched on that. Yeah, I came out last year during my homelessness. So I'm pansexual. Sometimes I go by bisexual depending on the day, but basically pansexual, I basically just like people for who they are. I don't really go by, like, what organs you have. I kind of go by, like, the vibe, and, like, yeah, I think I've always known that I like both, but that's, like I said, another whole topic in itself. And, like, being homeless and the types of personalities that I deal with while coming out, being homeless, like, it was interesting. And having a kid on top of that, like, coming out and being a mom already was interesting. Like, no one even really suspected that I was, because I had a child already, and people said I didn't
quote unquote look like I was, which is like kind of typical, but whatever. It's funny because I tend to mostly be into females now, which is very ironic. Very ironic. But anyway, I'm very just grateful for like even like being able to like go to counseling after like I came out. And yeah, I started off as okay to be me counseling, therapy with my therapist, and like then we just dug deep into like all my trauma after that. Like we were just like, all right, so you came out, what's underneath all those layers though? Because like I have a lot of things that I never dealt with or talked about through that kind of dynamic before, like therapist, right? So it was definitely very healing for me to do that. She helped me through a lot of like grief also, a lot of grief, or just like things that were, I had a lot of overwhelming things, all these things piled up, like as being a homeless mother, I had a lot of expectations and programs and responsibilities that I had to do on the regular. And also I was in school, like I didn't need to be in school on top of that, but I needed to like be productive during all that, or I would have probably felt worse if I wasn't in school during all that. And I also was working and going to school and, you know, being a mom all at one point right before COVID, like doing all three, which was really intense, really, really intense. I'm not gonna lie, but I'm thankful for all of that. It's like so weird. Like I know I'm like, and it's gonna sound really cheesy, but like I feel like everything, all of that stuff I've even told you just now, which is not, that's just the tip of the iceberg, but all that stuff I just even said, like everything happens for a reason. And I feel like if all that didn't happen, like it's kind of like a butterfly effect for like if something didn't happen, then I wouldn't have learned that. Like, and that's what I want this whole show to be about, is like all the lessons that I learned and like why all that stuff happened to me. It was for a reason. It was to teach me something, for a lesson to be learned, something I needed to learn by experiencing it, not just by someone telling me, because like I feel like almost no one learns that way, where someone's telling them like this is the right way and they're like, oh yeah, you're right, like, but you don't actually truly believe it until you've been in the shoes and you experience it yourself, like in the flesh. I just hope this whole show and like each episode kind of like gets something, like you guys get something out of it. And that's why I want to be like as vulnerable as I can and as open as I can. Like, I don't think many people are just talking about like all their, hey, let's talk about all my trauma on a radio show. Let's go and do that. Like, I don't think a lot of people, that's their first thing that's coming to their mind. But like, I just feel like I could help someone out there who's listening to me babble on right now. Maybe they just hear me and they think, wow, my life isn't so bad. Or maybe they relate to me and they like experience something close to what I have and they're like, wow, I'm not so alone. Like, anything of that relative, like, that will do me justice in my mind for doing this show. Like, even someone even thinking, like, wow, I'm not so alone. Or, with like I said, like, wow, my life isn't so terrible. especially like when it comes to like housing, I feel like everyone should always be very thankful for like their housing, even living with their parents. I know a lot of people, especially because the market has crashed, everyone knows this, especially in KW, woo, it's just crashed, like it's garbage, and I've can go through a whole thing on the experiences I've had of trying to find like market rent as a single mom student. Like I wasn't exactly the ideal candidate in my price range, definitely not. It was just a jungle in itself, just going through all that and like being homeless with my child and making sure she's not tainted. Like that was the main thing I did, make sure she wasn't tainted or like scared or, you know, anything. I didn't make sure she was like advancing well, which she always was above like all the age group that she was like set for. She was always advanced, so I like the only thing she didn't she didn't walk till she was 15 months old, but she's always like talked so much, like she's always been very like articulate and like she talks a lot, she's very smart for her age. So that was never really a concern, but I said to make sure she was taken care of always, and like I said, I had to live with social workers, so I had all eyes on me. I was living under a microscope for years with my toddler. Like, so usually when people have kids, they go home and they don't have this like big brother eye. And not just a big brother eye, but like they're writing logs on me, homies. Like they have to, each person who lives there, they have to write a log on what they're doing each day, even if it's just eating breakfast, lunch, and dinner, you know? But everything. So it was literally a big brother where I was getting like a play by play in a written thing that I could read later if I wanted to every single day. It was just under a microscope for years. I had to make sure not only that she was safe, but also people who were like looking as a bird's eye view on the situation didn't see a bird's eye view, which was like not the best light, because everyone has like bad lights where they don't look like the best in the situation, or like, you know, bad days, also bad moments, and like also like dealing with a toddler, there's like timeout situations, and like not everyone has the same perspective when it comes to like timeouts or like even like children in general. So it's like it was such like a weird dynamic to go through, and also like dealing with the different people you had to live with and the different judgments there, where like every mom had their own opinion of parenting also, and you had to go through the whole waves of that. I fortunately have a very good patience level and I'm a very understanding person, and I usually get along with people for the most part, and I'm very friendly and personable, and I don't like go and seek fights. Like I don't like drama. And a lot of these women that I've had to live with do, because, and I understand it, because it's just like it's a projection thing where like they don't have anything else to do, and I also had to live with moms, by the way, who have like, who are trying to get their kids back, so it's literally like they're just angry at the world, which I feel for them so much, but it sucked that had to be like the end of the stick, right, where they're projecting it on you, or like, or your kid has to be around any of that, and it was just weird environment to be with, not only for myself, but for me and my child. That's why I was in school, and that's why I wanted her in daycare and me in school, because I didn't want her to be around it constantly. So I couldn't even imagine if you're around it constantly. Thank God not really thank God, but thank the universe and low-key my decision-making for, like, putting us in, like, a social, like, setting for both of us during the day where it wasn't in an institution shelter during the day. Because I've had to do that, too. Like, during off days where, like, we're there at the shelter during the day. And, like, it's not always the best time because it's very unpredictable. Especially on weekends where, like, there's relief staff there and they don't necessarily, like, know who you are as a person. They only see you, like, once a month. So it's, like, they don't really know who you are or, like, your family. They just get to read logs about you and think that they know, like, everything about you and your life, which is, like, and some people, some social workers do judge you, even if, like, you're known, like, I was known as, like, in the shelter system, I was known as, like, the angel child, like, the golden girl, in the sense, even being looked at as that, there were still people who had a different perspective and a different, like, you know, upbringing, childhood, life, where they still don't like me. Doesn't, like, there's always someone who's not gonna like you. Like, I go by this phrase, and it's kind of ironic because I do have a nickname of Peach, but I go by this quote where it says, you could be, you know, the juiciest, ripest peach in the entire world, but you know what? There's still gonna be someone that doesn't like peaches. Like, just straight up doesn't like peaches anyways, even if you're the best peach there is. So I always think of it like that, where it's like, there's always going to be someone who just doesn't like you, just because you're you. Just because they're like, you know, I just don't like you. And that's okay. I've learned to accept that, where someone's just like, you know what, I just don't. I'm not feeling it. And I've experienced that in my life, where I'm just like, you know what, I just don't like you. Just not vibing. I'm not feeling the good energy. And like I have been saying, I've literally cut off my own blood because of negative energy or producing bad vibes. I always try to send good vibes. I never want ill intention on anyone. Like, I don't want any, and like literally, this is kind of a funny, and it was kind of like an inside joke with me and some of the people who worked there, but literally these women, some of these moms, they'd be fighting at like the dinner table, like just be screaming at each other for like a laundry slot time. Okay. Like literally the silliest, most petty thing you could think of, just like a house drama. And I would just be like sitting there with my kid, just eating like chicken parmesan, okay, and like just be mound on that and be like listening to these girls fight, and I would just start belting out in Kumbaya, like Kumbaya my lord, like straight up. And honestly it kind of works, because like they stop fighting, they look at you like you have two heads, like you're a lunatic, right? And they kind of, like, forget for a second what they were even fighting about, and they kind of sit and start, like, eating their dinner again. And also, like, the staff, like, doesn't want them fighting anyway, so it's, like, kind of, like, a win-win situation. And I don't want my kids seeing, like, them screaming each other over laundry time slots. Like, what is that? Like, no. And also, Hakuna Matata is also another one you could use. It's just, like, there was always so much, like, intentional drama or intentional even violence, like production of violence, and I never wanted my kid to see that. Oh, thank God it was mostly like not around her, like downstairs and at night, you know. And like I said, that's why I'm thankful for even this small little love shack we have now, because it's safe. There's no one else that is in this residence, you know, like it's just me and her. There's no other one interfering anymore. And for a long time it was constant, like COVID was definitely the worst because we had to wear masks in all common areas. So when I was cooking and eating food, I had to wear a mask. So like imagine being in your kitchen and having to wear a mask. Imagine going to the bathroom in your house and having to wear a mask
or just in the living room. So anywhere that's not your bedroom, you have to wear a mask. In your own house, by the way. So, like, when people at first were complaining about, like, wearing a mask for 10 minutes in a store, I was like, ha, 10 hours? Like, you know, like, please do 10 hours and then talk to me. I don't know, like, 10 hours on a mask, you know, with my kid and, like, I'm literally, like, cooking this food and, like, all the, like, steam is going into my face with this mask on. It's so hot, so hot. Summertime, not a good time. And, oh, and the best was not having an oven at the motel and in the summertime. And so I bought hot plates and I used to cook food in my bathroom. Kitchen slash bathroom, I should say. We had a mini fridge and a microwave. But yeah, I used to make grilled cheese in the bathroom slash kitchen. Like, any situation I've ever been in, I just, like, made it work, I guess. Like, I was just like, all right, this is what's going to go down. We're going to get this done, and I'm going to make my kid as safe as possible in this situation, and that should just go down. Sorry, that clap is probably really loud, but the main thing I want you guys to all get out of, like, listening to me ramble on each week is to laugh, maybe cry a little bit, and to learn. Learn from me, even if it's learn not to be silly and frankly stupid sometimes. Like I know I was my family dynamic, I can't really help, and I never want to blame, like, anyone for my life and how my life has turned out. Like I said, it's kind of like a butterfly effect thing. Like, each thing happened for a reason. I don't think I'd be the same person at all without all of those things, right? So it doesn't, I'm really honestly glad all that stuff happened to me, because I don't think I'd be the type of person I am now, and I really, really like the person I am now, and, like, my character and, like, my intentions. I know I always have, like, true intentions. Like, I'm never malicious with my intentions. I never want to, like, cause harm to anyone. Ill intention at all. There's definitely no hexes going on around here, if anyone's thinking that. It's always, I'm always sending good vibes. I always try to send as best vibes as I possibly can to everyone. I never want anyone to feel any low points that I've ever felt in my life. I never want anyone to feel any of that, like, turmoil at all. We're already at almost at 58 minutes. Wow. So I'm going to kind of go to my closing thing here. I made a Spotify playlist to go with this episode. I'm going to try and my best to do that each episode, because music is definitely a healing thing for me. It helps me. It's been like therapy for me, really. It always has been, and it's been like musical healing when it comes to that. So I made, and this particular playlist goes with this episode, just a list of songs that has helped me, like, throughout my childhood, and also kind of relates to, like, the whole My Name Is concept. Hint, hint, nudge, nudge, the first song on there is My Name Is by Eminem, so right off the bat, there's a hit right there. Just like a play on words, but you're gonna see that a lot. I tend to be very punny and play on wordy, and yeah, but kind of thing. It's kind of lame, but it's kind of admirable and charming at the same time, you know. But yeah, so listen to this playlist before or during or after you listen to this show, whatever you want to do. It just kind of, like, gives you a deeper perspective into, like, my emotions for what I'm talking about today, and what I've gone through, kind of, and music that has also gotten me through a lot of hard times that I've talked about today. And the next episode is gonna be, I'm gonna record
Ironically, I'm recording it on my birthday, so I'm going to call it Birthdays. Episode number 2 is going to be called Birthdays. And I'm going to record it on my birthday, which is so funny. But I'm going to tell you why I don't really like birthdays. Like, I don't really like them at all. And why I never really feel like, oh, like, my birthday's a big deal kind of thing. Like, and I will dive deep into that. But yeah, I'm really excited for the show. You guys can follow me if you'd like on all my socials. Instagram is Amelia Joyce, and then Twitter and TikTok is Amelia Joyce's. So Amelia Joyce with an S at the end. I'm most active on all three of those. And I'll link the Spotify link there too if you don't see it in the description for this. If you somehow don't see it, I'll link the Spotify playlist for this episode there as well. Amelia Joyce, like I said, that's my preferred thing. My preferred name, I guess. I don't really know. But yeah, I just want to, again, thank you so much to Radio Lori for even letting me do a show like this and letting me talk and ramble on about my life, and giving me a show to basically something that I've always been passionate about is relating to others and telling my story to help people maybe, or to like give them a different perspective that they didn't have before. And to learn something from anything that I have learned. Or maybe just to listen to while you're driving. Who knows? Or while you're just laying in bed. I don't know where you're listening to this. I hope you guys have a good rest of your week. I hope nothing too negative happens to you. I'm always, like I said, I'm always sending good vibes. And even to anyone listening to this, I don't care if you don't know me. We're strangers. It doesn't matter. I'm sending good vibes to you always. Yeah, so I will be seeing you guys. Well, not seeing you guys. You'll be listening to me every week. And like I said, you can contact me on my socials. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer them. I'm an open book. Like I said, I'm trying to be as vulnerable as I possibly can. So maybe someone can get something out of it. But yeah, so thank you. And I will be recording a new episode next week. And you'll be able to listen to that one too. And I hope you guys enjoy every episode that I record. And yeah, I don't really know how to end this, but sending good vibes, peace and love. Thank you, Radio Lori Lay. This is Lessons Learned, aka L Squared, and this is Amelia Joyce. Bye.